Israeli forces raid the Aqabat Jabr refugee camp as part of an intensified crackdown against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Iran says its comprehensive cooperation agreement with Venezuela is a turning point in their relations. Also ahead, tensions flare up between the U.S. and China over balloons. Washington claims Beijing had sent into American airspace for spying. Welcome. Our top story this hour: Israeli forces have injured at least 9 Palestinians during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jericho. Israeli troops stormed the Aqabat Jabr refugee camp for the 6th consecutive day. They entered the camp with heavy machinery to arrest a Palestinian man they claim had opened fire on an Israeli restaurant. The latest raid comes a day after the regime's forces attacked the city of Nablus and killed one Palestinian there. Elsewhere on Friday, they injured dozens of people who were protesting against the expansion of Israeli settlements on the occupied territories. The regime has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians in recent weeks. 36 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone this year so far. Professor of Political Science Mohaimer Abu Sada told us about how Palestinians have been responding to Israel's brutal force across the occupied territories.
The result of that Israeli aggression against the Palestinian civilian people in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem have resulted in the eruption and the beginning of a new Palestinian militant groups, especially in the area of Jenin and Nablus, where we, for the first time in 2022, have seen the rise of Palestinian armed resistance against Israel. We see a new group in the Jenin area, which is called Jenin Brigade, which is a group of Palestinian youth, mainly from Islamic Jihad and other Palestinian youth who are not affiliated with any Palestinian faction. The same thing can be said about the city of Nablus, where we have a new group called the Lion's Den in the old city of Nablus, who are mainly Palestinian youth dedicated to fight back to resist the Israeli occupation.
Tehran says a comprehensive cooperation agreement between Iran and Venezuela is a turning point in relations between the two countries. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, who is visiting Caracas, made the remarks during a meeting with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Amir Abdullahian said the implementation of bilateral deals with Caracas would boost ties further. Maduro, for his part, said the experience of the two countries in dealing with shared necessities, is strengthening relations. The two sides also stressed the need to stand up against foreign pressure and defend their national interests. Amir Abdullahian earlier held talks with Venezuela's vice president, among other top officials, and discuss ways to strengthen ties in different fields. Now, China has accused the U.S. media and politicians of using the recent balloon incident as pretext to launch a smear campaign against Beijing. The Chinese Foreign Ministry issued a statement after the U.S. Secretary of State canceled a planned trip to the country over allegations that Beijing flew a spy balloon over the U.S. China had already expressed regret over the issue, blaming winds for pushing what it called a civilian airship into U.S. airspace. On Saturday, China further said that it never violated the territory and airspace of any sovereign nation. The ministry also emphasized the need for maintaining communication channels at all levels to deal with some unexpected situations. Antony Blinken issued a personal note to his Chinese counterpart after the discovery of the balloon over the U.S. state of Montana.
In my call today with Director Wang Yi, I made clear that the presence of this surveillance balloon in U.S. airspace is a clear violation of U.S. sovereignty and international law. that it's an irresponsible act, and that the PRC's decision to take this action on the eve of my planned visit is detrimental to the substantive discussions that we were prepared to have.
Blinken further said that the U.S. remains committed to diplomatic engagements with China and that he would make a trip to Beijing once conditions are favorable. Meanwhile, the Pentagon has said it had spotted a second similar balloon flying over Latin America. Beijing had already denied the U.S. accusation of spying. It said the balloon was used for meteorological purposes and had unintentionally escaped into U.S. airspace. Emmanuel Pastrage is the president of Asia Institute. He says the United States is spending a large budget on creating unnecessary hostility with China.
Essentially, we have a system which is out of control. And now, sadly, this relatively tiny group of people within the military and the arms contractors are making policy for the entire country, feeding it to the politicians, and they have really no brakes on them. They're going, in the case of Ukraine, basically any weapon, except for nuclear weapons so far, although that might come soon, is being fed. In the case of China, a country, I think as a whole, Chinese have a relatively positive view of the United States. Many Chinese have family in the United States. It was not a hostile relationship, but billions and billions of dollars are being poured into making it, hyping it up to be some sort of enemy. And Blinken's trip is totally logical. He should go very frequently, canceling it over this one minor matter out of, you know, thousands of similar ones, really shows us that the whole a system is falling apart. The wheels are coming off of the cart.
It's time now for our news review segment, where we take a look at one of our stories in a little bit more detail. The EU Commission chief says there is no rigid timeline for Kiev's accession to the European Union.
There are no rigid timelines, but there are goals that you have to reach. Reforms, for example, to improve a situation in the candidate country to then reach the accession negotiations and the accession itself.
Ursula von der Leyen praised Kiev's determination to meet EU recommendations despite being at war with Russia. Elsewhere in her remarks, the EU Commission chief said a new package of sanctions against Moscow is on its way to make Russia pay for its actions in Ukraine. She said technology will be targeted in the fresh sanctions to curb Russia's ability to produce drones. Meanwhile, the Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky urged the EU to accelerate its arms supply to Kiev.
If weapons are accelerated, namely long-range weapons, we will not only not withdraw from Bakhmut, we will begin to deoccupy Donbas, which has been occupied since 2014.
Zelensky also said Kiev will not surrender Bakhmut and will fight as long as it can. This comes as Kiev's Western allies pledge more weapons, mainly sophisticated and long-range arms, to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned the West's military support for Ukraine will only prolong the war and increase the suffering of its people. This as Russia ramps up pressure on Ukrainian forces in eastern battlegrounds and also in the northeast and the south. Joining us for more on that is Johnny Miller, our correspondent in eastern Ukraine, Donetsk, and also Greg Simmons, author and researcher from Uppsala, Sweden. Gentlemen, welcome. Johnny, so can the delivery of these weapons effectively help the Ukrainian forces advance on the battleground, on the battlefield that's been under the spotlight recently?
Well, at the moment, that seems very unlikely. Even the New York Times recently released a post, an article saying that it will take months for these tanks and new weapons to reach the front line, whereas at the moment, Russia is launching huge offensives across Donbass. They're trying to take Bakhmut, Ublodar, heavily dug-in positions. The Ukrainians are putting up a very stiff resistance, but it looks like the Russians at some point will take these towns. There's also an expectation that Russia may well launch a massive offensive in the coming weeks or months, and it's unlikely these weapons will be able to get there in time to stop that Russian offensive. So at the moment, this conflict can go two ways. For Russia, this is an existential war. They can mobilize huge amounts of men and military hardware, parts of their economy. They see it as an existential war. Whereas NATO and Ukraine at one point will have to at some point enter negotiations. We're already seeing some parts of NATO start to question whether continuing to support and supply Ukraine is in fact a losing battle. But still, the pro-war camp, led by the likes of Boris Johnson, seems to be winning out. And the other way this can go is continued escalation and, of course, the very real risk of the official beginning of World War III.
So, Greg, membership of the European Union, membership of NATO, how will that exactly help the Ukrainians suffering on the ground, who are essentially calling for peace instead of war? The EU itself is suffering from an energy crisis and rising record inflation levels.
Yeah, well, I mean, you hear it's very bureaucrat speak, because we have goals, but we don't have a timeline. And I mean, if we look at that in the wider context, I mean, this is similar to what they've been saying to Turkey about EU membership for how many decades? This means that there is no intention, but they're just drawing them along with this carrot. Keep in fighting and dying for the US empire, because this is what they're trying to do. Keep them on the hook, so they keep on fighting and dying. This is what all of the US politicians are saying. That this is, I mean, they're all saying it between the lines, and some of them say it directly. If we keep Ukraine armed and supplied, they'll fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. I mean, this is what this is part of. These so-called carrots to join this Euro-Atlantic sphere. And, I mean, it's just not feasible. I mean, the EU, as you know, I mean, it's suffering all these kinds of crises. And Ukraine is an utterly corrupt and dysfunctional country, which would make all of the other ones look fine and functioning. I mean, look at the effects East Germany had on West Germany by integrating something that was functioning. It doesn't make sense in practical terms.
Right. Johnny, the narrative of Western mainstream media, most of them, we can say perhaps all of them, stationed in Western Ukraine, whereas the focus of the battle, the flashpoint, is in Eastern Ukraine, the same regions that have seen ethnic Russians fighting Ukrainian forces since 2014, not 2022, when Russia launched what it described as its special military operation. Is there no sense of care for the Russian, for the ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine?
Noam Chomsky and the great Australian journalist John Pilger a few months ago said that they've never seen the level of propaganda in this war than they've ever experienced. And they've been reporting and writing about war since Vietnam. And I think the only news channel which has reporters on both sides of the conflict is actually Al Jazeera Arabic. I think they have on both sides. And of course, very few reporters are here. And of course, Press TV does a great job of giving this side of the story as well. And it is so important to give both sides of this war, because when people realize that the vast majority of people here in Donbass support Russia, and indeed, as you say, have been fighting for the last 8 years, we can come to realize that there is actually a peace agreement to be had, one that doesn't involve just sending more and more weapons to Ukraine. If we listen to the civilians on both sides, there is a way out of this. So, and Ukraine, NATO and Ukraine also have a way, an off-ramp. At some point, they could declare victory. They could say, well, we've stopped Russia taking over the whole of Ukraine, and well, actually, most people in Donbass want to be part of Russia. And to push that line to people. And we may well see that in the future, some more coverage of the fact that most people here in Donbass support Russia. And that's when we can start talking about peace.
Right, and then, Greg, Kiev's Western allies pledging more sophisticated weapons, is that not to the detriment of the Ukrainian people? Even because it essentially means the West seeks to prolong the war instead of seeking a peaceful solution. And on the other hand, as Johnny noted, the once these weapons reach Ukraine, I've read a report that it may take until the end of May for these weapons to reach Ukraine, the tanks to reach Ukraine.
Okay. I mean, if you look at this, you have strategy in different domains. What they're talking about is the strategies in the first three domains, land, water, and air. But what they're doing to try at, because Ukraine has a disadvantage in all three of these physical domains, what they're trying to do is counterbalance that by using information as the fifth domain to try and to make up for those disparities, these asymmetries in the other ones. And I mean, as has been noted, I mean, this has just been used to, as you say, I mean, it's not benefiting anyone. It's not benefiting Ukraine and Ukrainian civilians most of all. What it is benefiting is the US, who have been openly saying, even before the war began, that they're going, I mean, Victoria Nuland, the one who carries cookies, I mean, she openly stated before the war, we want to use Ukraine to inflict a geopolitical defeat on Russia. So this is what it's about. It's not about winning a war. It's about containing and weakening Russia.
Okay. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your contribution. Let me thank our guest. Johnny Miller is our correspondent in the Eastern Donetsk region of Ukraine. Greg Simmons is an author and researcher joining us from Uppsala, Sweden. And that brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
As humans, the Earth is our home. It is the only home we have. The Earth is where we live, breathe, eat, and raise the future generation. Our entire life support system is dependent on the well-being of our natural environment and all of the species living on this beautiful blue planet. But what have we done to it? How have we preserved it? I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Unfortunately, our planet is in grave danger. Many species of animals and plants are nearing extinction. Our clean air and water supply is at risk, and more of our beautiful open spaces are disappearing as new buildings and factories are built. What is worse is that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer as we speak. This week's exclusive documentary explores the perilous state of our planet. Stay with us for the first part.
Issue the tsunami warning gives us a clear idea of what's happening.
The cloud is now moving south. It's harmless to people on the
coast. Over thousands of miles, why doesn't that energy dissipate?
The Earth isn't feeling well. Its fever has risen, and its situation is getting worse by the day.
Nowadays, we hear people saying the Earth's temperature is rising.
The average temperature of the Earth was about 15 degrees Celsius in the beginning of the 20th century. During the Ice Age, the average temperature of the Earth was only 5 degrees less. Take into consideration this 15 degrees and compare it to the 10 degree average during the Ice Age. Now, if this 15 degrees, God forbid, reaches 19 or 20 degrees, what age could you call that? The ebullient age? Naturally, the subsistence of life will end way before the ebullient age. Of course, the Earth has other problems as well, but climate change or global warming is a major problem, which increases the frequency of drought, storms, and other consequences and natural disasters that take place on the Earth's surface.
The existence of icebergs in the north and south poles cause reflection of solar energy, which is known as albedo. Without an ice cover, this energy will be absorbed by the Earth's surface and accelerate global warming, altering the average temperature on planet Earth. We can say the Earth has a fever. It may be 1 degree or 1 2/100 degrees.
There's a very simple formula. Q is heat energy, which is equal to the mass of substance multiplied by C, which is a specific heat capacity multiplied by delta T. A 2-degree delta T, for instance, is multiplied by a huge mass at a specific heat capacity, which sums up to what? A very large Q. And what does that all mean? It means that all these signals I'm giving you are alarming. And it means that I'm continuously moving from the green line into the orange and red lines and into the danger zone.
Greenhouse gases are gases that can trap wavelengths larger than 4 microns within themselves. These are wavelengths that are radiated to the Earth from the Sun, and when reflected from the surface of the Earth, elements become trapped within the wavelengths. They trap greenhouse gases and absorb heat, which leads to the gradual warming of the Earth.
Just like inside a greenhouse, as in the ones used for farming, when solar radiation penetrates into it, the trapped heat is not completely removed, and it causes the inside of the greenhouse to become warmer than the outside. Greenhouse gases play the same role in the Earth's atmosphere.
Greenhouse gases per se are very useful. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which we usually refer to as carbon dioxide, is very useful because without these gases, the temperature of the Earth would fall to minus 19 degrees Celsius. Minus 19 degrees Celsius means a total freeze. It means no agricultural or farming product would be able to grow. Obviously, it wouldn't provide the requirements for human existence on the Earth. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and the partial trapping of energy reflections from the Earth have caused the Earth's temperature to rise to 15 degrees Celsius. In other words, greenhouse gases have caused a 34 degree temperature rise. This process has obviously created the ideal situation we have for all living creatures to thrive. A forest is one factor responsible for absorbing greenhouse gases. It is necessary for soaking up greenhouse gases. Unfortunately, forests around the world are being brutally desecrated for their wood and their land. You can see many instances of deforestation around the world. Deforestation has taken place to enable farming, but also for building factories and cities. When these forests are destroyed, the global sources for absorbing greenhouse gases are weakened.
With the proliferation of greenhouse gases and the increase of human activities on the surface of the Earth, which has provided the growth and spread of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the basis for absorbing and trapping thermal energy that is reflected from the surface of the Earth is further provided in the atmosphere.
The atmosphere's capacity for greenhouse gases is 2,900 gigatons. And until now, in the year 2010, about 65% of its capacity has been emitted. So from 2010 until the year 2100, the atmosphere only has the capacity to handle another 35%.
And obviously the basis has been provided for the Earth's average temperature of 15 degrees to rise to 15.5, 15.7 or 15.9 degrees and even to 16 degrees at times.
از این 1900 گیگاتون منتشر شده در کل جهان در
اتمسفر. A large portion of the 1900 gigatons emitted into the atmosphere belongs to countries which have caused more emissions starting from the 1840s and 1850s. Developing countries with 81% of the world's population have only emitted 26% of these gases.
Therefore, we're facing a very serious humanitarian hazard, and we need to take serious measures to stop the emission of greenhouse gases.
Progress is being made, however. Beijing authorities are closing factories and outlawing burning coal for heating.
Naturally, a rise in the average temperature of the surface of the Earth from moderate levels can have bad consequences, and temperatures higher than that can pave the way for various disasters on the Earth's surface.
We're working in a totally unsustainable way. We do things to feel at ease, but we only have one planet Earth. We can't later immigrate and leave this planet. If we destroy it, where else can we go? This is it. And the destruction we're causing with technological development is enough to put our lives at risk now. As a human being, I'd ask, what sort of technological development have we accomplished? What sort of technology have we achieved? Or what have we done for human comfort that hasn't harmed us in any way? Give me one example.
The skyline is littered with factories, and toxic smoke pours into the air day and night. For those living here, it's a choice between pollution.
A federal appeals court upheld the Environmental Protection Agency's emission standards for hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. The court rejected state and industry challenges to rules designed to clean up mercury.
Top German lawmaker in the European Parliament said reducing supply in the CO2 trading market would boost prices.
What does it mean to live in a polluted place? It means that particles, say 5 microns, 2.5 microns and 1 micron increase. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide increase. Now it depends on the quality of the gasoline and the gas that you use. The sulfur and nitrogen derivatives, ozone and finally soot and particulates all scatter in the air and they eventually enter the body either through the nose or the mouth.
So body cells that start from the nose, eyes and mouth and reach the depth of the lungs are all affected, and these substances enter the bloodstream through the respiratory system.
It affects the brain. We become tired fast. We become impatient. We quickly lose our temper and verbally assault each other. There's no need for one to be ill. Those who are ill are at greater risk.
We see B2B, business to business. Just business to business. It's usually called B2B. This is a disaster. Even if it means death and costs us our lives, which is our most important index, we have a brain. We don't use it. The only thing we see in business is the money. Everything depends on how deep one's pockets are.
Everything is with jibe.
Development is a natural process in human growth, which has existed for thousands of years. It's now been accelerated, becoming faster and stranger. But during this development process, some of us have become rich. Some are filling up their bank accounts and becoming wealthy. It's interesting, though, that these same people, sometimes directly, but most times indirectly, have to somehow return this money.
The oil leaked for 87 days, the worst offshore spill in U.S. history. BP was later found to be grossly negligent for the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon platform. And today, it agreed to a settlement that will include a $5.5 billion fine for violations of the Clean Water Act, $7.1 billion to the U.S. government and five states to repair coastlines smeared by oil, $4.9 billion to settle economic claims by those five states, and up to $1 billion to 400 local governments. Louisiana, the most heavily damaged, gets almost $7 billion, the biggest share.
This is by no means chance and accident. Our experience in development over the past 100 or 200 years shows that technological advancement and city living have been the cause of this. Name any technology you like, or whatever has made human existence easier, and you'll find it's harmed the environment.
China has announced the successful containment of its worst ever reported oil spill, although much work remains to be done before an ongoing cleanup is complete. At a media briefing, the vice mayor of the northeastern coastal city of Dalian, where the spill occurred, said workers had used more than 40 kilometers of oil barriers and 65 tons of absorbent pads to stop the slick reaching international waters. Yet with oil remaining on beaches and in the water, he also acknowledged a full cleanup will be an arduous task.
Go back 160 years in time to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. The industrial age in the 1850s to see an impact.
It's been about a century that we humans have opted for consumerism on the earth, and as we have moved forward in recent decades, consumer demand has risen.
Until a point, we lived along with the earth and the nature. From a point onwards, we just forgot about what the earth is, where it's come from, and where this kind of usage will lead us to. We just want everything. The high consumer demand that we're witnessing these days is just destroying the earth's natural resources.
But a leading scientist suggests the reasons for the drought may be even more worrying for Brazil in the long run. Has continued deforestation in the Amazon and in the Atlantic forest drastically altered the climate?
We created the packaging industry to be able to easily relocate food products and conserve them for longer periods, so we would be able to keep a packet of food or fruit juice for, say, 2 weeks without it being spoiled. What's been the outcome? Go take a look at the landfills to see what we've done to the earth by producing all this garbage, garbage that can't be recycled. It was done for our comfort, but it's also put our future in danger.
If we move back a few decades, there were a limited number of countries that were consumer-based and that used a lot of energy and products like the United States and in Europe. But these days, global consumption on Earth has sharply increased as countries in East Asia, especially China, have started boosting their consumption.
About 56% of these greenhouse gases are produced by fossil fuels.
سوخت‌های فسیلی.
Naturally, the rise in the use of fossil fuels is due to energy requirements of machines used for ever-expanding development projects. To boost the machine age, the industrial age. Due to this boosting process, the developed world has had to increase its use of different kinds of fossil fuels. This has paved the way for partial deforestation, which aims to provide the agricultural requirements to cover total food needs of a growing global population. This causes change to the optimal 15-degree world average temperature.
In the northeastern prefecture of Miyagi, and what you're looking at right now on the screen is in the city of Sendai.
A couple of feet of water, so they have to stand out there until they can manage to get the boat across and then take a big group of them into an entrance rack and ramp of ice tents.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is For a Better Life for IRIB English Radio. I am your host, Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and one of my specialties is in taking some approaches that leads to having a better life. And my talk is based on the Quran and Islamic narrations. In this episode of the program, I intend to go through a subject that most of us are involved with, which is the negative side of being talkative. A talkative man is someone who speaks a lot, and mostly what he says is full of trivial conversation and unimportant ones. Such a man talks too much about unwisely materials, and he is usually a big-mouthed man who cannot remain silent. A person who has this great appetite of talking usually leads himself to the detriment of his dignity and respect. Let me firstly refer to what Imam Ali says in this regard. The Imam says in Nahjul Balagha, which is a well-known book for the Imam sayings, and the Imam says, "Hanat alayhi nafsuhu man ammal alayha lisanah." The one who allows his tongue to overpower him has debased himself. Let's have a look at how a talkative man decreases his honor and respect. This man who is more eager to talk than to be a good listener usually deprives others from having a fortune to talk. When he is amongst his friend, he thinks that whatever he says is more interesting than others. While if he thinks more intellectually, he would admit that others also have a desire to talk. It could be interesting to note that if someone has a kind of feeling, he should feel that others may also have that kind of feeling. If I, for example, like to be admired, I should think that others also like to be admired as well. If I hate to listen to others, other people may also hate to listen to me so much. Why should think that I am too inventive in pleasing others, more skilled in being funny and making others laugh, or more informative and more genius? Totally in opposition, we by talking so much may make others more bored and tired. Indeed, the outcome of his attitude is debasement and losing the value and a degree and a portion of esteem. Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah. Ya Allah, ya Allah, be with me far the way. The next negative effect of talking so much is that a man who have the incentive of talking and talking, since he cannot remember in which time he said which thing, he mistakenly repeats what he had said once in a meeting again when he meets those people in another time and in another meeting. He may also elaborate about the same subject while he does not know that prior to that he talked sufficiently about that scenario, and now is going to repeat the same again. Then people who are listening to him have two choices, whether to make him aware that he had talked about it and it would better not to repeat that, or to sustain the boredom of listening and bear it up with the hope that the man's speech comes to an end soon. Imam Ali in another saying says, "Man kathura kalamuhu kathura khata'uh." The one who talks so much faces with many mistakes. For example, he may say something and uncover a point that had better remain secret. That point would be better not to be revealed. He may uncover a point about someone that the man whose point was revealed would disgust it and later on blame him and complain for what he said. It is obvious that the words that do not originate from thought and reason, and even piety, in many cases create danger and unsatisfaction that humans are not able to compensate for, and sometimes cause the resentment for honorable people. Some other people are going to hate it. It also may lead to discord and discomfort among people, and also brings about hatred and enmity towards the speaker.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Another problem for talking so much is that it leads to the waste of time. Why should we talk about every trivial, unimportant things while talking about them will give us no benefit? Let me add that even with regard to important things, we should push ourselves to our limit. I have seen in many occasions that some people, even when they want to analyze an important subject or to preach or even talk about a wisely point, elaborate about it so much that they make the listeners totally bored. It seems that they want to convey all of their information and knowledge about a specific subject to the people in just a single meeting. Once I remember that in a meeting a man was asked to preach. It was about a year ago. The man recited a verse of the Quran and continued to talk about it for nearly 1 hour. Some people who were next to him, who wanted the session to be quitted, were put into a predicament since we could neither leave the place, it was against the respect the man had, nor could endure to listen anymore. When finally, due to our fortune, the man decided to end, told me that, alhamdulillah, I could describe the scenario sufficiently for 1 hour. But most of the people just can't remember from all of what we said, just the main subject and some small related point, and no more. People are not like a tape to record every point they listen for 1 hour. For the next time, if you try to talk again, some people, for fear that they might be stuck for 1 hour listening to you, their prior to your talk may leave the place, so that they don't be forced to be present until the end of your speech. As a result, if we want to talk about a useful point, we need to be concise and precise. Should not elaborate for a long time and become a talkative man. We are not the only one who knows everything, the only one who are skillful in interesting people, the only one who desire to speak. Other people also have their useful point of view. We need to train ourselves to be a good listener, even more than the desires of being a good speaker. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.